it's weird because you have to present a life and, you know, and clothing and stuff that's exciting enough to keep people engaged, but not so over the top that they start getting mad at you, like you sold out or you're doing too well.
Yeah.
It's a very fine line to straddle.
I'm very interested in, you know, the idea of being a person and then being a person that people have eyes on.
Right.
And the...
He's
eating into the microphone. The being a person and being a person that people are watching and being able to find a balance between that. Like, how do you not lose your mind?
Oh,
like,
I did a little bit. I mean, I'm 33 years old and this is the first time I've ever seen a therapist. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% like literally just because of like becoming a public person, especially like, kind of like later in life, you know?
Yeah. What is that like?
Really weird. And it's weird for two reasons. So number one, like basically since I was a little kid, all I've ever wanted is to be famous. Truly. Mm-hmm. I've been very open about it. I don't feel bad about it. I think there's lots of like pursuits in life, and like, I don't think wanting to be famous is any more egocentric than like wanting to have a family full of kids that look like you. I truly don't, you know? And like much like Andy Warhol, that's like why I love Andy Warhol so much, not just because like he's become this artist that's everywhere, but because he's an artist I'm super well read on. And Andy Warhol was unapologetically and very openly obsessed with fame and the concept of being famous. Mm-hmm. He loved to surround himself like he is kind of famous in a way for being obsessed with fame. Like, obviously he's an artist too, but the kind of art he was doing is not actually like, it's groundbreaking in its technique, but not in its like skill level. Mm-hmm. And then you work so hard. I mean, truly for like a decade plus I was working at it. And then and then you finally like get that first level of like big success. And it's great for a little while, and then it starts not being so great anymore, because unfortunately, like fame is something that people have the outside world has so much power over, that like other people create fame, but other people can also ruin fame for you. Like ruin how you can enjoy it, because they really have control over it. Because to be famous, you need a lot of other people to like you and to like intake whatever it is you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And so to it's buy like what you're selling.
Yeah. So it's like, in a way you have to keep them happy, or you have to like keep being this, like if your character of who you are is not a 100% accurate version of who you are, podcasting is unique in that people feel like they really, really know you and they're friends with you, but also like they feel like you're so accessible that you're not, that they don't have the same level of like respect or distance for you that they would have for like a person who's like in a movie or in a TV show. Mm-hmm. So it's weird. And then you have to digest the fact that like, wow, I finally got what I wanted and it's not what I thought it would be. And now how do I fix, like, how do I, and so it's like, has, you know, 30 years of my life been a waste? Should I just quit? Should I do something else? Is this not for me? And not only did fame, and I mean, this is, I call it Tila Tequila fame, low level internet celebrity fame. Not only did it not feel the way I thought it was going to feel or give me like any satisfaction beyond the fact that I was proud of myself for doing something that like very few, many have attempted and few have achieved. Cause it kind of like just reinforced in me, like I always thought I had something special in me. And it reinforced that I was like correct and it was the correct pursuit. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make me happy.
Did it not make you happy because it didn't align to what you felt it would be, this perception of what you thought fame would be? Or did it not make you happy because, you know, the podcast Guys We Fucked is basically a sex tape for your ears? You know what I mean?
It like, started as that. It's not that anymore, though.
For sure. But do you feel that you've exploited your personal life and then you were like, well, who the fuck am I? I've got nothing left. All of my stories are out there. Like, what was that like, having to just basically cut your veins and bleed and let everyone sop up your blood?
It was, I do feel like I have exploited myself in a way, but I don't feel like, who am I? I don't feel like that. I know who I am.
And who are you?
It is. You can't explain who you are as a feeling. You can't explain who you are. And also, like, something I'm working on with my therapist. It's so interesting. Like, because one of my things is, like, I know very well who I am, but I'm someone who I think other people either have a lot of misconceptions about, or just kind of have no idea mm-hmm. what they're getting. Mm-hmm. But what was I going to say? The exploiting myself. I mean, like, that's like, it's just like, I still think the idea is great, but like, I always joke, like, in retrospect, if I knew how I was going to turn out, would I have done it? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Even though it has given me money and success and like a following, just because I'm an introvert, but I realize like how intense of an introvert I really am. And I have people constantly, like, you can hear a story and then just hear what you want about it, or hear something someone says. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a constant problem in my life. I'm always being misinterpreted. Even though I feel like I have great clarity in my words, like, I'm a writer before anything, mm-hmm. and I'll read something back or listen to something back, and I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. It's not even just intention. Like, it's exactly what I wanted to say. And people are really just kind of taking it, you know, my friend said, you know, they're just taking it like the Bible, like they're taking the pieces of it and you that they need, mm-hmm. and they're molding the story so that it fits their lives, so that it resonates with them. Because, I mean, really all this content, especially super personal content, like you're taking it in so you feel less alone, which is fine, but it's different when I'm not a movie character, I'm a real person.
Right.
And like the stuff I'm doing on the podcast, like, especially the earlier episodes, it's just like 100% me. I'm better at it now. Like, I'm more protective and I know things I can say and things I cannot say and things I have to be careful about. So I'm like, it's still authentic, but it's like a piece of me, not all mm-hmm. of me. I always make sure to keep things to my, like, to keep something for myself.
Yeah, how
now.
Do you do that? How do you find that balance between, well, I've got to share this, or I keep this to myself? Like, what is that line? And how do you decipher that without having to lose your mind?
I just tell less about my personal life. And I think it definitely, like, sacrifices the content a little bit and sacrifices, in some ways, the fans, because I hate calling people the fans too, like the listeners, because, you know, they're going to end up feeling a little less connected with me as I share less. So that will make their feelings towards me a little bit less strong. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's worth it. And like, I just always like remind myself, I'm like, you've given enough. Mm. Like, that's, you know, you've given enough. Mm-hmm. And if they don't like me, if they don't know me enough by now, and like, I try to find other things, you know, to talk about that can still feel personal without actually just giving out my life. Because, you know, there's a difference between being in a relationship and then talking about it afterwards, and then being in a relationship currently and talking about it as it goes along. I think mm-hmm. the second one is super destructive. The first one I don't think is that bad. And I've never, like, trashed anyone. I've really just only hurt myself. So. Mm-hmm. Which is, like, you know, that's always my... I prefer to hurt myself over other people.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I'd rather the joke be on me than someone in my personal life.
Well, yeah, because I feel like I'm strong enough to handle it, and I also know exactly how I'm going to react to it because I am me.
But do you ever feel that you are the butt of the joke?
The butt of the joke? No. Yeah. I mean, like, to comics sometimes, I mean, like, I've heard every whore joke that's ever, you know, been made, mm-hmm. and I definitely know that, you know, because it's like I feel like I am primarily a stand-up comedian and I just happen to have a famous podcast. But I know most people think of me as a famous podcaster who happens to do stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. That's fine. They don't know my timeline. They don't know the work that I've put in.
Right.
And I just, you know, I'm not going to sit and fight about it. I just keep doing the work and keep doing what I was doing. And mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, eventually the set will speak for itself and that they're like, oh, this is someone who really worked hard at this.
Mm-hmm. Are you constantly thinking like, oh God, I can't say this. I can't say this.
Yes, but then I say it anyway because I don't want to ever stop being a comedian.
Right.
And then it's hard because then you get angry and then you're almost like, am I just saying extra mean things now to fucking give the finger to anyone? Mm-hmm. I mean, what I did was I, in the past several months, I've taken on a lot of like smaller rooms that, you know, I had kind of like graduated from mm-hmm. career-wise. I went back to those rooms because I know that I can say no one knows me there.
Mm-hmm.
Like even half the comics who run the rooms don't know me because they're so, mm-hmm. so much newer. And that's great. I love it. Don't mm-hmm. know me. Don't, you know, don't, right. I have people bring me on with a credit that's not the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So like you'd have to really like love the podcast to know anything about me. Just mm-hmm. going up to rooms of strangers and trying the jokes about, you know, this ever extending list of things that we are not allowed to talk about. And like that's what? Where I just work on that. All the fucking trigger shit, raped, trans, race, all this shit, mm-hmm. all the shit that you can't touch, which is exactly the shit that comedians want to touch because we want to touch the biggest things. I don't want to talk about a bad Tinder date I went on.
Mm-hmm.
Not interesting. No, yeah. Thank you.
Are you afraid though that talking about those things is going to get the floor pulled out from underneath you?
I mean, I've already had an instance like this year. So I mean, like basically we live in a world where if you reach a certain level of being known, you're going to have a scandal and it's just like, can you get out of the scandal or can't you? How bad is the scandal? What is the scandal? You know?
And how do you handle that?
I mean, I was expecting it. So mm-hmm. for kind of basically like, I was like, yeah, this is coming soon. It was about race, which I didn't love. I was like, oh, I wish it was about anything else, you know, right. Just this constant thing of like, and you're like, you can't fight it. There's, you know, reason. And I talked to, you know, some, you know, people of color in the comedy industry and they're like, you can't fight it. And I was like, you know what? You're right. You're like, cause whatever you say is going to be wrong. And right. I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. But, it's just all it's like, you know, like because it got so out of hand and it was like based on something from 5 years ago that I said in passing on an episode. And I remembered it, but I didn't, you know, I just didn't. I remember like a couple people had gotten upset about it and we had addressed mm-hmm. it and moved on. And I definitely had like been more cognizant of it in the past. But like I listened back to it because the articles that they were writing about me, I was like, Jesus Christ. I was like. Like, am I a racist? Like, what the fuck did I say? And then at a certain point, I was like, I have to go back and listen to this. Because mm-hmm. in the beginning, I was like, I'm not even going to listen to this. Like, I remember this episode. Right. Stupid. And then I was like, God, I was getting so worried. I was like, maybe I don't remember this correctly. And so I went back and listened to it. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, it was actually less bad than mm-hmm. I had thought it even was initially. So it just shows how people blow things out of proportion. And I was just like, I know who I am and how I feel. And it's like, you know, whatever. And I also stand by the kind of core of what I said. I would have absolutely worded it more elegantly. Mm-hmm. But it was a much different podcast 5 years ago. It's turned into like a kind of, you know, I don't like, it's not like, I don't want it to be like social justice warrior because that's gross. But like a lot more
thoughtful.
Yeah, it's just about different stuff now. When before it was like truly just like a Howard Stern for girls,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I mean, even a Howard Stern has grown. Everyone's allowed to grow.
Right.
I think, and I think we're taking that, like, we just don't take that into account. Like, I used to, when Hillary was running for president and people were just digging up anything they could about her, including like that she was initially against gay marriage. I was like, I had a joke kind of about like, how are we not allowed to grow? You know, right, like, right. Are we just who we are always? You know, times change and your thoughts change. Like, you know, if you had asked 20 years ago, like if your kid came to you and felt like they shouldn't have a penis and wanted to get it off their body, like, would we have felt chill with that? I mean, like these are concepts like we have to grow as a society.
Right.
And like, not to mention that, like, you know, politics is also a business. If decades ago, she had been very vocally like pro gay marriage, she would have never made it in politics. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you have to pick and choose, even if in her heart she always felt it was okay. Like, you have to let her say that she's against it so she can get up to a spot where she can make a change.
Make a change, right?
So you have to keep some things hidden. Like, it is a, you know, you're playing a game. So it's like, are you playing the short-term game or are you playing the long-term game? Mm-hmm. You got to think about that. It's strategic. Everything's strategic. That's business-oriented. Yeah. You know, love shouldn't be strategic, but business certainly is at every point.
Right.
And if you're not thinking of it strategically, you're not great. And you can say, well, I'm an artist. It's like, okay, you're an artist, but you're an artist who's never going to see success. I consider myself to be both a business person and an artist, and I don't feel ashamed of the business part. I think it's fun. It's a fun game that I navigate. Mm-hmm. I was a manager as assistant and a junior talent manager for 5 years, and I didn't like it. It didn't make me feel good. But I think, okay, well, I don't want that 5 years of my life to be a waste. And now I use it every day to manage myself. And I learned so many amazing business techniques that I just don't think most people know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is great. It's not chance. You know, success, especially in comedy, I don't think it's really by chance. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of like how much you put into it. And then like a little bit like who you are, as in like it's a career where, you know, like if you have a look or you're a certain like type of comedian, you have a higher, you know, rate of success or mm-hmm. like chance of being successful than others. And, you know, I mean, I'm white. So even though I'm a woman, it's really not that great of a time for me either. I was talking to my friend and I was like, yeah, there was like 2 years when it was cool to be a white woman. I just wrote a joke about that though. So I feel like at least I used it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you were, you know, being accused of being racist and mm-hmm. everything for what you said, how did that feel?
And meanwhile, for anyone listening who doesn't know about it, I don't want everyone fucking Googling it and then like hearing much stuff worse. Basically, like I was talking about black comic who I used to date, and I was saying he was kind of like nerdy, and that I like I am sexually attracted to like a thug black guy. That's what
right,
I said.
Right.
I don't think there's anything, you know, I don't really know. And then I was accused of fetishizing black men. Mm-hmm. Which, as a woman, to be accused of fetishizing is hilarious, since our entire sex is constantly fetishized.
Right.
And so it's like I stand by my preference. My loins still feel the mm-hmm. same way, but there's this argument now that to actually have a sexual preference is some kind of constraint of society, and that it is still like an inherent racism. And
yeah,
that's a much larger conversation.
I've seen people on Twitter say that, like,
yeah,
if you won't date a trans girl or you won't mm-hmm. make out with a trans girl, then you're like transphobic and you're a bigot. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
That,
I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
I mean, there's 1,000 things you could say. So now can ugly people be like, you're ugly phobic?
Right.
You know, because it's like at a certain point, your eyes are reading things at just like an aesthetic level. Mm-hmm. And like you just are attracted to certain things. I mean, I have preferences all over. The kind of porn I watch is literally only like suicide type girls. Mm-hmm. Like I don't watch porn with blonde women. I don't watch porn with big breasted women right. or women with fake breasts. There's so much porn that there's, yeah. Basically I'm watching porn with a girl who looks kind of like me right. is usually like, or I can do a redhead too, like a Chrissy Mayer type, yeah. you know, like those are
preferences.
You know, and it's not like I was spent my childhood reading Playboy. I was like, you should be okay. He always jumps over mine. Yeah. And yours actually is metal. Mine's plastic, but
yeah, I that's such a weird thing. When someone accuses you of racism and you know in your heart that you're not, how do you address that and overcome that without wanting to like shout at the world and be like, fuck you?
Well, I mean, everyone's a little bit racist, you know, to quote Avenue Q. We can't not be. We live in a biased world where,
right.
you know, and you And my experience, of course, is going to be very different because of how I look. And I'm never going to know exactly what it's like to be a person of a different culture or a different sex or a different sexual orientation. There's no possible way. I can try to learn. I can talk to people, which is, I think, what my one of my favorite things about podcasting is hearing about how life is different when you are different and look different or, but like, I'm never going to be literally in their shoes. We're never going to Freaky Friday. So, you know, I think it's good to be cognizant of those things, but there is a certain point when it gets to, it's just like, your mind's going to explode because you feel like you can't say anything, you can't do anything. And at a certain point, my theory is you have to say, you have to be able to have a conversation in which you say the wrong thing and are, you know, corrected in a non-demeaning way and then are able to make an adjustment, you know? So it's like,
well, that's growth.
You have to be able to say the wrong thing. And I had a really interesting conversation with Kate Bornstein, who is an older trans woman. Yeah, yeah. About that. And also her partner, Barbara Corrales, is a wonderful kind of like tantric sex master, non-gender specific master, using that term without gender, of course. But and I kind of said that, and she was like, yeah, of course, like, you know, I mean, she let us ask, you know, questions that I think a lot of trans people might be
uncomfortable
or offended by, so that we were be able to learn. And she's kind of like, well, I'm not going to be offended, so you can ask me the questions.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you don't have to ask anyone else the questions anymore. Right. And you're a more intelligent person for it. Right. And it was great, you know, because that's how I feel. I actually used to do the same thing. Like, I remember in like social studies class in like the sixth grade, I was like the only Jewish kid, and I'm not even fully Jewish. And people had a lot of misconceptions about Jews in the classroom because anti-Semitism, I have a theory, is always whispered, you know. A lot of other racism is yelled. And then in parts of, especially like, you know, in the New Jersey area, there's a lot of anti-Semitism, but it's whispered because there's too many of us here, you know, and we're running too many things. And so I heard people in my class like just talking like really shitty things about Jews. And so the teacher and I and everyone, we just had like a group conversation where I was like, tell me you're like the stupidest or like the most hateful thing you've ever heard about Jews. And I'll tell you like maybe where that comes from or why that might be a perception that people had. So people in my class were literally like, why are Jews cheap?
Yeah.
And I would just be like, well, I think I was like, you're seeing it as cheap, but I think Jews are using it as like they've been through a lot of hard times and they're just trying to use things in a smart way, you know. And I did. I was like, you know, in a Native American way where you're kind of like just using everything and like less wasteful and thinking towards the future and saving.
Right.
You know, it's more like Jews are more like of a we're doing this long term rather than enjoying things short term. And right. I don't think either one is better. You know, because Jews are going to have a, you know, a great way to retire, but they're going to be like probably stressed out in their youth, whereas other cultures might have fun in their youth and then have a more modest retirement.
Yeah.
You know, it's just whatever you want.
Yeah. I think those conversations are important, especially
if
feelings are left aside and the general goal is for knowledge to come together.
Yeah. And I mean, like it didn't like, if, I mean, I was just like, oh gosh, I was like, I was kind of like, I was kind of interested to hear those things because I was like, oh, you know what? I was like, if I probably wouldn't have never known people had thought this way, and I'd rather have a conversation about it now than these people go through 7th, 8th, 9th grade and still have these like really kind of like hack ideas about Jews. And of course, like some stereotypes are, you know, stereotypes a lot of times are based in a reality, but
speaking of reality, I wanted to ask, how do you balance being a person with being someone who's perceived to be in the public eye in terms of just living your normal life and distancing yourself from this perception people have of you?
Like people as in my peers or like people as in people who listen to the show?
Both.
Both. I don't know. I'm less concerned with people who listen to the show because I don't know them in real life. And as long as it's not hurting.
You are very personal on your podcast and everything, and you do share a large part of yourself.
Right,
so.
But they can think whatever they want to think, you know? Like, that's kind of like what I'm like, where it's just like, I don't know them. So as long as they're not. So basically, my only problem is when I have to have a direct interaction with it. you know? So like when someone will come up to me and just say something like very familiar but incorrect, is how I would explain it. That's when it affects me, because it like, it just makes me feel sad and misunderstood. But also I've felt misunderstood my whole life, and that's not like a, you know, a dramatic statement. It's just like, I'm kind of really used to it by now, and I'm okay with it. Like sometimes I even feel like my closest friends like are a little off in their thoughts on me, and it sucks, but I'm like, it's okay. You know, because every now and again, I'll find someone like my ex James. Like I felt like that was, I had found someone who like truly understood me. And so I guess it's just like a search for that. But as far as like my peers, I feel like sometimes I'm very like misunderstood, especially like the amount of work I'm putting in. And that's what's important to me. I don't care if people like me, but I do care that people know that I'm really putting the work in. That's what I care about.
And how do you decipher between someone wanting to be a friend or someone who could potentially want to use you?
Oh God, I think everyone wants to use me. I just don't, I haven't really taken on any new friendships.
Yeah.
All the friendships I made, I was like, you had to love me when I was unsuccessful and not funny.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I haven't really like, I have a core group of friends who, including you, who are people who I feel like comfortable with and would have like a real conversation with, you know, because there's surface conversations and then there's real conversations. We've gone to the diner and had real conversations. So that's what I mean, like, yeah, I don't, can't even think of a new friend. The only, one of my most recent friends who I really, really love, is someone who was already doing well on her own and is comedy adjacent but not a comedian. And so that was a really great person for me to
find. Does that ever trip you up mentally, or do you just sideswipe it and just move forward?
As far as like not being able to trust people?
Yeah, or just like,
it makes
me
sad because I truly love being a comedian, and I wish there was more people that I felt like I wish I could be in a green room and have a conversation and not feel like this is going to end up someplace else. But the thing is, comedy is so small, so it's like, even though I don't think of myself as famous, other people do, because they see, you know, people coming up and taking photos with me, or they see me selling out, you know, theaters with Christina. But you know, there's just so, but then I'll go someplace and I'll, you know, you'll see Amy Schumer or Chris Rock there and you're like, well, that's really famous. I'm sure they see, you know, someone like, is Kevin Hart bigger,
Seinfeld,
I guess.
Or
Seinfeld, or I was going to say Elton John. He's not a comedian, but just like a larger presence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I guess who's the top? I guess, and then you get to the top and you're like Madonna, and then you just don't allow running water when you're taking a nap in your home.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, I guess, where you stop.
Yeah.
There's just a lot. Yeah, there's just also specifically because comedy is so fucking hard. There's just so much shit talking and so much jealousy. And I really try to stay away from that.
Yeah.
I really try to. I mean, obviously, I see people getting things that I want, and people think, "Oh, you're great. You're doing great. You're perfect." No, I would actually like rate this year as a pretty unsuccessful year for me. There was a lot of things that I feel like I could have done or wanted to do that I just failed at, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, does that ever trip you out when people are like, "Wow, you're killing it. You're doing great."
Yeah.
And then do you say, "No, I'm not"?
Yeah. Well, I used to express my real feelings, but then I learned that people just think you're complaining or ungrateful for things you have, which to me is hilarious, because it's like, I mean, you know, I am grateful, but I also, this, I didn't win the lottery. I mean, I fucking put a lot of hard work, created a concept, you know, it's like a lot of things I did, and I never want to not give myself credit for that. Cause like people who are like, "Oh, it's just really great fortune." It's like, it was a little bit fortune for sure. Right time, right place, right fan base. But it was also a lot of work and a lot of planning. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't know, Christina and I had been working together for like 4 years on a branded concept. I mean, we worked for a long time as a comedy duo.
So when someone comes up and they're like, hey, you're killing it. Yeah. Things are great. You're like, I put in this.
No.
What do you say?
No, I'm just like.
Oh, thanks.
So, it depends who it is. Like sometimes with comedians, I will try to be like, really be like, ugh, I just feel like I am not really having a great year. And then I learned very quickly that people are not going to respond well to that. Mm-hmm. So I just stopped saying it, and only my really close friends know that I feel that way.
Right.
Because I mean, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's like me being mentally ill, that's still how I feel. Yeah. And I also do feel mentally ill this year. In the past 2 years, I've never felt a lack of clarity in my own mind. And I feel that now. Like I feel jumbled. And I mean, I'm working with someone on it, but I mean, like it's getting real where like basically it's like when you become... And I mean, these are theories I believe, not necessarily like science, but like when you become a known person, you then are getting hit with energies anytime people are thinking of you. It's the same concept as the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in God, but I do believe in the power of prayer mm-hmm. in that just a bunch of people get together and think the same thought towards the same thing or concept or person. And there is a true palpable energy or measurable energy that is created from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing as prayer, but only it's not religious. It's just, I mean, celebrity is spiritual in a way. It is a worship,
mm-hmm.
but just not.
Yeah. How do you keep the ego in check in terms of if you're getting all these outside things telling you that you are a certain thing, but you feel that you're not, like, how, where is that balance?
What do you mean telling me that I'm a certain thing? Oh, you like telling me that I'm so famous when I don't feel famous?
Yeah.
Oh, I literally just go to people, like when people will come up to me and like crying or like starstruck and they'll say like, oh, I'm starstruck. I'll be like, oh, I was like, don't worry, I'm not famous. I'll literally just say that to them.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't mean to ruin their good time, but also I think it's important for me to say that just so I can hear it out loud. Yeah. But well, the thing is, like, I think very highly of myself, and I actually think that I've become more modest because it's something I think about now. Mm-hmm. Before I was like cocky as fuck always, because I'm like, you kind of need to be cocky when you're in this business, when you're not doing well, because you have to fake it until you make it. You have to believe in yourself. Right. You have to be your biggest champion.
Right.
If you're a fan club president, secretary, and treasurer. So I feel like I've gotten less cocky because I just don't want people to think that fame has, like, fame in quotes always, has gotten to my head. And I don't want to be distracted by that. Like, I'm there to do the work. I try mm-hmm. to, like, keep it a low profile. Like, sometimes I'll even wear, like fake glasses, like, because I feel like it's almost like a security blanket to keep a little distance and just, like, keep mm-hmm. myself a little checked into my own thing so I can just kind of go in, write in my notebook, do my work, say thank you to everyone who gave me time on the show, and then kind of mm-hmm. skedaddle.
When they know you...
Mm-hmm.
and they know your stories and everything, how mm-hmm. do you go out and just do comedy when
right.
everyone has this expectation of what they think you are?
Oh, 100%. And I bomb in front of my own audience more than I bomb in front of any other audience.
Really?
Uh-huh. Because they think who I am. Or they've misinterpreted the podcast or heard what they want to hear. So they think I'm kind of this cookie cutter feminist.
Right.
Super millennial, super accepting of everything, not going to question anything on the progressive side.
Right.
And that's not at all how my comedy is.
Right.
Someone fucking walked out of my show in Chicago because I made a joke about Demi Lovato overdosing.
Right.
Mm. And it was like...
Like when you go out, do you say like, hey, this isn't going to be what you think it is? Or do you just go
sometimes
right into it?
Sometimes in my set, like if I can tell that they're not going to respond well to a joke. But I mean, you know, it's like you just got to... Because it's like you're working against a persona and thoughts that they already have about you. And you're also trying to introduce people to comedy
right.
who a lot of our audience has never seen a live comedy show.
Right, right.
And so you're going to come. And then, but I'm 8 years in. I'm coming in guns blazing.
Yeah.
I can't phone it in. I can't give you the Cliff's Notes version. I can't give you, you know, nursery rhyme version of the thing I've worked so hard at.
Right.
Either you can handle it or you don't. And if you leave the show not liking me, you never liked me to begin with because my stand-up is really me. That's real. That's who I really am. Like, that's why I wake up in the morning. I'm not lying on the podcast. I'm not being someone I'm not on the podcast, but I definitely have to be a little bit more, you know, careful about my words, unfortunately. Whereas on the, you know, stand up, I'll just have a mental breakdown on stage. But again, even like the shows I do for like the people who listen to the podcast are different. Like I have the comfort to spiral deeply as much as I want in front of an audience who doesn't know me. Right. In a bar show, I mean,
right.
Some of these bars you can come to and like, I am just having a breakdown on stage. Right. And it's great.
Yeah. And you need that.
I need that. It's wonderful. Yeah. And just shit's coming out of your mouth. You're like listing people's full names. Like, you know, like, I gave out my real address at a show in New Hampshire.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Because I walked in. Yeah. I was like, I walked in. It's like this tight, like, you know, it's a tiny room and a club, but a really small room. And like, everyone just is like, toothless and wearing like sweatpants on a Friday night. And right. like, I go and my heart was racing and I was like, fuck, there. I was like, they're going to hate my, they're going to hate these jokes.
Right.
They're going to hate them. I was like, this is going to be 25 brutal minutes. And then I was just like, and like, you know, the club owner is fucking disrespecting me because he doesn't have any idea.
Right.
That I'm like a national headliner because I'm here featuring. Like, right. Because I've completely undone so I can get the work done. And, just being treated like trash. I kind of loved it. It kind of made me horny a little. And then and then I was like, let's fucking, because like the headliner was so mad. He's like, he doesn't have any idea who you are. He's like, you could sell out, you know, 50 right. of these. And I was like, but who cares? If I was like, you know, I was like, you know, it's like, that's like a dude thing, like respect. I'm like, I don't, who cares? I'm like, I right. know who I am and I know what I've accomplished and that's fine. I was like, I was like, you know what? I was like, it's a real challenge for me because like, let's see. It's like, am I, have I reached a level of success because, you know, I just struck gold, or have I reached a level of success because I put the work in and I'm really good at this? And so I was like, we'll be able to test that out right now because like the jokes should stand for themselves no right, matter who right. I am, you know? And so I went on stage and I was fucking so nervous and I haven't experienced that level of nervousness in a long time. And I had two great fucking sets. And I was like, great. I was like, this is great. I was like, that's what I needed. It was like reawakened me. And like this month I've wrote more new jokes than I've written the entire year because I've just been going to like little fucking dipshit bars in New York and just fucking grinding on my own. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's what I needed.
Yeah.
You know, you can do both, but like I just never want to lose touch with like doing these little rooms. And like, I've seen like high level comics like TJ Miller pop in to like little thing, mm-hmm. you know, these little rooms just unexpectedly. You see that.
Yeah.
You know, there was like, you know, a time when Louis C.K. was like allowed to, that he was popping into little independently produced bar mm-hmm. shows. Judah Friedlander does it a lot. There yeah. are comics that you see who just kind of do that, who are not performing for comedy fans or not performing for their fans.
Yeah, that's great. I mm-hmm. respect that. I think a lot of people do. That's great because you could easily rest on your laurels and
yeah.
just take a step back and bask in it. But the fact that you're putting in the work again is really inspiring. And
that's a true testament of a comedian, though, because it's like...
Massively respect.
Like, no matter who you are. I mean, like, it's like, you know, Kevin Hart can sell stadiums, but can Kevin Hart go, you know, to the Creek right. in the Cave? And do a set that really wows people. I mean, I think you need to always be able to do right. both of those. And it's hard because, you know, there's a time in comedy when you're like, am I an alt comic or am I a club comic? And I really, 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 really always tried and still try to be accepted in both rooms.
Right.
Because both rooms have value.
Same here, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, I never want to get, you know, I think there's a vagueness to club comedy. And then there's a pretentiousness to alt comedy. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, what do I got to do? I got to text someone.
We can wrap this up. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I really enjoyed your perspective and,
of course.
You know, your thoughts and how you've dealt with things. I think it's really important. Is there anything you want to plug or get out there?
I have two podcasts. Obviously, you heard the one that put me in therapy, Guys We Fucked, the anti-slut shaming podcast. And then I have another podcast. I created it because I needed some fluff after just like years of talking about sexual assault and bad and heartbreak, called Two Less Lonely Girls. It's an unironic a podcast for adult Justin Bieber fans, hosted by myself and Rosebud Baker. It's like a 30-minute show, and we talk about Bieber, but we talk about celebrity as a concept and just anything crazy going on in pop culture, and it's really fun, and it hopefully will make you feel less lonely. And I'm at Philanthropy Gal on all social media.
There it is. Yay. Corinne Fisher, the one, the only. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was quite the in-depth talk. Corinne can really spin a yarn, huh? I'm glad she did. I really enjoyed hearing her perspective, and I'm always interested in what it's like living a public life versus a private life, and how you balance the two, and how do you remain true to yourself, as well as deciding what to keep for yourself when you've made a career out of exposing yourself. And it's interesting to hear her take on it. And a lot of those things I didn't know, and it was really nice. I think a lot of us struggle with what to share, when we overshare, when we don't share enough. Sharing is hard in general, let alone personal excruciating details about your life for other people to consume. And so I'm really glad we had this talk, and I hope other people find it interesting as well, because it's always something that's fascinated me. And I don't think I'm the only one on that one. You know, I've been struggling myself with how much to share, what not to share. And so it's a conversation I've been having with people, and it's always fascinating to hear what they have to say. And I've been friends with Corinne for a long time, so I'm really grateful that she opened up to me, and I'm really really honored she opened up to me as well. And you know, the amount of work she's put in, and Christina as well, is whether you like the podcast or not, you like their comedy or not, the work they've put in has been tremendous, and I really admire that, and I admire anyone that puts in that kind of work. It's inspiring for everyone, whether you're involved in the arts, whether you're involved in a private endeavor, putting everything you have into something and seeing results from it is incredibly, incredibly inspiring and rewarding as well. Speaking of rewarding, I really enjoyed this week. I hope you enjoyed it as well. If you'd like to come see me live, ianfidance.com. If you'd like to send me an email, ianfidanceswildworld.com @gmail.com. Did I just have a stroke? I think I had a stroke. Do I smell toast? Oh, God. Wow, the world is closing in on me. Things are suddenly getting dark. Oh, God, last words. What will they be? Try to love others as much as you love yourself. Death. Goodbye. What was that? I think that was me shooting. You shit when you die. That was me shooting.